Okay, let's take your phone calls now if you want to share some stories that you might have heard about those flying saucer air wars of 1952 or questions to Stan Friedman or Frank Fascino. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take your calls. Hey, Frank, let me ask you, on the back of your book, you've got an incredible picture of a 1954 photograph. Can you kind of paint us a picture and describe it for people who aren't looking at it?
Yes, it's a 1954 photograph of a pair of F-94C Starfighter jets that carried the rockets from Griffiths Air Force Base. And in the upper right-hand portion of the picture, there's three UFOs with motion lines connecting them. And this picture was taken of a series of shots by a professional photographer from a New York paper. He started on the ground, he went up into the air, and he took these actual pictures there. Now, what's interesting about this particular pair of jets is there was a famous case that took place shortly after this photograph was taken. And it was the famous Walesville, New York incident, where an F-94C Starfighter from this state, the same Griffiths Air Force Base, actually the Starfighter went out to intercept the UFO and it crashed into a town.
Okay, to
so
the
there
folks.
Was a lot of UFO activity where in that section of New York where Griffiths Air Force Base jets were sent out and intercepts.
All right, thank you, Frank. Let's take some calls. Let's see what we've got here. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how y'all doing?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
I used to live in Mandela, Oregon, about around about 95, and I was looking up at we looked up at the moon one night, and I noticed this big bright star, brightest star I've ever seen, about the 7 o'clock position below the moon. And instantly, I just got this feeling that something wasn't right about it. I watched this thing for about two and a half, maybe 3 months. I was looking up at it one night, and it just faded out into nothing. Just disappeared, just like the chandeliers in your dining room. It's got that little knob on the wall where you can adjust the brightness of the light.
Yep.
And I watched it, and about a minute later, it brightened back up to the brightest light of the star again. I've seen it do this several more times over the next couple, several weeks. And one night I looked up there, and there was another star just like it, about the 1 o'clock position up above the moon. Well, I watched this thing for a couple months, and I started seeing it do the same thing. Only when it faded out into nothing, there'd be a little blinking light kind of come up behind it and disappear into it, and then it would brighten back up again. Well, one weekend I was in Salem, probably about 2:30 in the morning. I was out in the valley just north of Salem, and I come around this corner and looked up in the sky, and there's this, like, egg-shaped object floating across the valley. It's probably about maybe 200-300 feet off the ground. And I stopped my car, I got out, I looked at it, my girlfriend was with me, she seen it too, so I know it wasn't hallucinating. And this thing worked its way up, and it didn't turn like an airplane, it kind of zigzagged a little bit, and went up to the 1 o'clock position on the moon that I'd been watching for a couple of months. Well, I watched the thing for the next couple of hours. Well, it finally left where it was next to the moon, and went over towards Portland. And I watched it come down and then start going parallel with the horizon. And all of a sudden, it started letting out these little blinking lights. The first 12 lights that come out, they were kind of like a whitish, bluish color. And they would come down at about a 45-degree angle, headed towards the east. And then just up above the ground, they would curve back down towards the west and disappear into the horizon.
Well, let me get your take on this, Stan, because I don't want the complete details of a sighting here. But what are people seeing when they describe things like that?
I really don't know. They may be seeing astronomical phenomena. I was going to say variable star, but that doesn't fit when you look at the whole business. You'd need a lot more detail. And reports like that are very frustrating to me because there's not much you can do with them. If you got exact time, if you got reenact the case with the witness so that you can see angles, for example. Now, people say something was huge. Well, that means different things to different people, as one problem. You got to pin them down. I've had people say, oh, it was huge, and then, well, how big was it compared to the moon? Oh, much smaller than the moon, apparent size. Well, you know, which way is it? You can cover the moon with an aspirin tablet at arm's length. Try it sometime for those who think, oh, come on. Now, at arm's length, now you can't hold it up next to your eyes.
First-time caller line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Bob calling from Minnesota. Good morning.
Hi, Bob.
I worked several years ago in the state of Maine, and one of my coworkers was a neighbor of Benny and Barney Hills in New Hampshire. And we would talk, and he would not go into great detail, but because of his closeness to them, he was a definite believer in them and in UFOs and extraterrestrials. And I guess it was part of, through some of the things that I've experienced and my conversations with him, he was totally convinced as their neighbor that they were totally on the up and up and made us all believers.
Well, this one's for you, Stanton, back and forth.
Well, yeah, I think it's important to realize that Betty was a social worker, a supervisor in the welfare department, state of New Hampshire. Barney did work for the post office, but he also was very active in civil rights back then, was on the governor's civil rights commission in New Hampshire. They both were active in the church. These were very respectable people, and it was one of the reasons they didn't want any publicity. The reporter calls him from the local paper. Somebody had given him a clandestine tape, if you will, of a quiet private lecture they had given, and they thought they'd lose their jobs if they got any publicity, but they went to a lawyer. There was no way you could stop the reporter from writing what he was going to write. But these were very, very respectable people, Kathy heard about the sighting, you know, the day after it happened. Betty called her sister, Kathleen's mother. And so I'm not surprised at what the caller is saying, because everybody who knew them way back when will tell you these are not people who make up stories. These are solid citizens.
Let's go to our next East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Cleveland.
Cleveland. Go ahead.
Yes, I was when I was a boy, I remember my mom took me up to upstate New York, and we would always talk about, she would always talk about the funny stars that's in the sky, and she would say behind the mountains there was a winery, like a winery grove or something.
Yeah.
And found out that it was actually a alien, I guess a launch pad or something. They would come down with the ships and talk to me when I was a little boy, and I was always...
What?
Intrigued about that, and I always wanted to look into a UFO investigating, and now that, you know, Stan Friedman talking about the UFOs, they exist, and maybe with somebody they'll land and talk to us.
I'd like one to talk to me, but
I would too.
Cold today, but
did you see these creatures?
Yeah, they said I used to see them when I was little, and I used to play with them when I was a little boy, and now I wish they can land and see me now, maybe. They can pick me up, but I guess I'm too heavy.
All right.
Well, you know, I should mention Bud Hopkins, who's one of our foremost abduction researchers.
Yes, he is.
Bud has a number of cases where little kids were picked up. I remember one, the family found the child at the door in the middle of the night, and the door was locked, and the child had been inside. Now, how'd the child get outside and not be able to get back in? And Bud has a bunch of pictures drawn of various and sundry things, Santa Claus, and, you know, symbolic stuff that kids might be interested in. And it's amazing. He's got people who point at their little playmates, and that's your typical alien face.
Almost like Bigfoot playing with kids. Same kind of thing. Wildcard line, you're up with us. Hello there.
Hi, my name's Jack. I'm calling from Bradenton, Florida.
Hi, Jack. Thanks.
Real quick, just an honor to speak with all of you. I'm just a huge fan. And about 2 months ago, I emailed Mr. Friedman just a quick paragraph about a sighting my mom had back in the 70s. And he emailed me back, like, right away. And I just want to say thank you, because to me that was like a little kid meeting, you know, their sports idol or something like that. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I just wanted to ask the quick question. I guess to Mr. Friedman, what do you believe the intentions are of the people visiting the planet, or is there multiple different beings who all have different intentions? I was just curious as to that.
Well, it appears that they're here for a number of reasons. I mean, if the bus is going this way, might as well send all the grad students. But and on my website at www.stantonfriedman.com, I have the UFO why questions is one paper. And one of the questions, of course, is why are they coming here? And I give about 20 reasons. You know, why did people go west in the United States back in 1849? There's gold in them thar hills, you know, and up to Alaska and to Australia. The bottom line for me is that I assume that every advanced civilization is concerned about its own survival and security. That seems to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. That being the case, you have to keep tabs on the primitives in the neighborhood, but only close tabs when they show signs of being able to bother you.
Yes.
And at the end of World War II, there were three signs that soon these idiot earthlings, this primitive society whose major activity is tribal warfare, I don't know a better way to describe it.
And they've stumbled now into the nuclear age.
Well, yeah, we got rockets, V-1, V-2, we've got atomic bombs, we got fancy electronics, radar. These guys are going to be out bothering us within 100 years. And any sensible civilization would say, hey, wait a minute, do we want these guys out here? Heck no. So I think they're here to quarantine us, if I can put it that way. Make sure we don't get out there until we grow up. Now, whether we will grow up or not, I don't know. That's the challenge of our time, to stop killing and start feeding. But I think they're concerned about us. Now, it may be that they've been stealing resources, those nodules at the bottom of the ocean, you know, grabbing a asteroid or two to strip them of the metal and so forth. We don't know. But I think the notion that we're at the top of the heap, we're the advanced civilization, blah, 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 is baloney. I think we're at the bottom of the heap, that the space is crawling with other civilizations. The reason I say that is we haven't been around that long. I mean, the whole planet's only been here 4.5 billion years, and there's stars out there that are 13 billion years old.
You know, I keep saying, Stan, why come and visit us? What are they doing? You know, if they're mining, we really don't have signs of it today. You know, Zechariah Sitchin would say he did. But I think we've been seeded. I think they're watching us because they help make us.
A competition. Who did the best job of planting a colony on Earth? Hey, all of you guys goofed.
Yeah, drastically, too. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there.
Hi, George. This is Jeff in Albion, California.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, you bet. And I was a fire spotter in 1992 in Northern California. I used to read the logs after my duty shift was over, and there was a fascinating entry that I found in 1947. This gentleman, his name happened to be Pinkerton, and he had made hundreds of fire log entries, but this one was amazing to me. He saw a, quote, flying saucer flying just below the level of the fire tower. And to make this entry when his job with the government was to spot fires and not flying objects was quite amazing that he put that into this book. And I also happened to be stationed at Norton Air Force Base when I was in the Air Force. Stanton, I wanted to ask you, you used to have a book available through a P.O. box. I wonder if that book is still available, and also I'd like to contact you that way rather than by computer because the NSA, et cetera, the government interference, and I certainly would hate for the record to be destroyed if somebody found out before I was able to get your copy of it. Is that possible to do?
Well, I'm not sure which book. Crash at Corona was my first book, The Definitive Study of the Roswell Incident. The second one was Top Secret Magic. And yes, if you got your pen, I have Post Office Box 958.
958?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Houlton, Houlton, Maine, M-E, 04730-0958. And if you go to the website, www.stantonfriedman.com, it tells you how you can order all this stuff. You can use PayPal, too, but if you want to stay away from electronics, you can download an order blank, send a check. You know, it's amazing, George, how honest people are who are interested in UFOs.
I know.
I don't have checks bounce. That's not a challenge to anybody out there.
Now that you brought that up.
All of my books are available. Captured is available that way. And incidentally, I know it's cheaper on Amazon. They got better buying power than I have. But if you get it from me, you get both signatures, both authors' signatures. That's all on the website. Or you can send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll send you a free list of books and stuff.
All right, let's get to Wildcard Line. You're up with us. Good morning.
Hello?
Yeah, hi. Take it away.
My father always told me a story. In 1963, he was stationed at Griffiths Air Force Base, and he was flown down into Jersey. He was in bomb disposal and had to, render safe a nuclear missile that burned up.
God, we got a scratchy line on you. Tom, take care of Wild Line 2, and we'll call you back and see if we can get a better line. Sounds like you've got a great story. I don't want to miss that at all. Stan and Frank, do you still get whistleblowers? Do they contact you, too?
Yes, quite a bit, George. As a matter of fact, Stanton and I were in West Virginia this past September for the 55th anniversary of the Flatwoods Monster. We had a big event up there in Charleston, and I spoke to quite a few people who came forward in reference to the Flatwoods Monster case. And after they had read the book, they would contact me after they read the first book, the second book. And it's quite amazing how these public appearances, how people will come forward and tell us stuff, or they will meet us, talk to us, and then email us.
So well, I also get phone calls. My phone number is in my books, and people seem to be surprised that I would do that and put my phone number in and that I would answer my own phone. I think they think I got a big organization. I'm a one-man organization. And, I just got an email from somebody who described jets chasing a UFO in 1957 near Minneapolis, September 57, a few weeks before Sputnik. And we're looking for I'll give out my email address, FS for flying saucer, of course, PHYS for physicist, at rogers.com, rogers.com. So I don't hide. I've never had an unlisted number.
You're out there. Are you still traveling a lot, Stan?
Well, I'm working on the book for these couple of months, Flying Saucers and Science.
So you try to lay low on that when you do
that? Yeah, at the moment. But then once the book is finished, we'll be out traveling. I'll be in Aztec, New Mexico for their annual conference, another crash saucer case. That's March the 28th, 29th, and 30th.
Okay, well, stay with us, Stanton Friedman. Frank, we're going to be back in a moment. We're going to take final phone calls. We've reconnected with Paul, whose line was a little scratchy, so we'll get his story, too, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're going to have Linda Moulton Howe join us tomorrow night in our first couple hours of Coast to Coast, and then some open lines. But I got to tell you, I just received notice that we may have had a Coast to Coast guest died. I'm not going to give you his name because this is unconfirmed, and I don't run with stories like that. If this is true, I'm going to devote just a portion of tomorrow night's program toward the end to play a clip of one of that person's interviews. Very disturbing, but we've got to check this out. And it came from a pretty reliable source. So we'll do that. But we'll be back in a moment. Stanton Friedman, our special guest, Frank Fraschino, and the rest of your calls. And Paul, we'll get you when we come right back. So hold on. And welcome back to Coast. Let's take Paul first of all. Paul, I know you've been on hold for a while. Let's see how the connection is.
Oh, that sounds better.
There he is. Okay, go ahead.
So basically, back in 1963, my father was stationed in Griffiths Air Force Base. He was a bomb disposal person. And he was called down, him and his commanding officer were called down to New Jersey. A nuclear missile had burned up on a launch pad, and he was there to, render it safe, take it apart or whatever.
Right.
He said once they got down there, they saw these, pod prints on the ground with hieroglyphic-type writings on them. And, he put his Geiger counter against it, and they pegged out on beta radiation. And proceeded. You know, that was a whole story in itself, taking apart a nuclear missile. That was really the point of the story, which was, you know, fascinating to me. But then years later, he had heard that apparently he was describing that incident to someone, and they said, well, yeah, there's a story where, you know, a UFO was flying over. They tried to shoot it down, and they, you know, put some heat beam on it and burned it up on the pad, and that was the incident. So I was wondering if you guys ever heard of any incident like that.
All right, Stan, Frank?
No, that's a first for me, George.
Well, certainly I've heard of, how shall I put this, our systems being decommissioned, how's that, put out of action. As a matter of fact, at the big press conference in Washington, D.C. on November 12th, the Iranian jet case, it was clear that the UFO was able to cause a malfunction of all the systems on the airplane. This would be in keeping. The airplane was trying to go after it, fire its missiles, and whoops, now nothing works. Came back on when they turned away. So this is consistent with that picture of somebody saying, hey, you idiots, get off my back, if I can rephrase the reality. So that doesn't surprise me. I haven't had any direct accounts of exactly like that, but makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, you're not only worried about the airplanes chasing you, but how about the ground control missiles that are going after you? Protect yourself. That's the first rule of an aviator, isn't it?
And I do know the whole time I was growing up, I guess every few years, or, you know, a guy would come out, you know, some federal person, and, you know, ask him if he ever talked about it. Well, I guess he did talk about it to me, but, you know, they did actually check up on my father. To, you know, he's since passed away. But
that's a great story, but it's well worth calling you back for.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more. My website has had to reach me. It has a phone number on it, too, for that matter. Don't call me in the middle of the night.
All right, we'll do that. StantonFriedman.com. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with Stan and Frank. Hi there. Sounds like a talk show duo.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Am I on?
I think so, yes.
My name is Joe Aguirre.
Okay, Joe.
And I'm in Sun Valley, Nevada.
Okay.
And I knew a general that flew with the F-15. The guys that beat the speed limits and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
He was a chase pilot, and then he went from there to being working for Area 51, when they had nuclear bombs blow off, they had a big cloud of nuclear stuff going towards Las Vegas, and they sent them up to disrupt the nuclear clouds, you know, go counterclockwise to get it away from the Las Vegas, and they saw a UFO, and it really shook him up, and they went after it, and his plane started acting erratic, and they told him that, you know, the shoot at it and stuff like that. Before they got able to shoot at it, he had to bail out because his plane started falling apart.
Gee.
And he ended up with radiation burns on his legs and stuff. And then after a while, they decommissioned him. He lost his pension. He lost everything. And
what did he do wrong for them to do that to him?
I don't know. I guess what he saw, because at the end of his life, because they had to amputate his leg because it was so badly
cancerous
burns or problem with the spaceship or whatever.
Did he ever explain what he saw up there?
Well, he explained some to me when he was passing away, because I got to know him quite a bit because of got to know him because he was a radio operator or whatever in the service and stuff, and I wanted to learn. And he, end of his life, he couldn't work no more, so I helped out at his shop and stuff, and then I went to visit him in the hospital, and he finally broke down and started telling me these stories, and even about the F-15 pilot that supposedly broke his rib on the horse accident. It wasn't a horse accident. It was something else.
So did he tell you what he saw?
Yeah, he saw like a spaceship and lights and stuff, and it got hit with a green, like a laser light or something like that, and then his plane just
and that was a long, long time ago. How old are you now?
I will be 53 tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Well, you're still a young puppy.
Yeah, but he passed away in about 90s, and I'm getting, I'm a young puppy, but I'm getting old, but I wanted to tell his story before.
Well, I'm glad you did. Stan, that's one of those stories.
Stuff like that, but I don't want to really say it over the radio.
Okay, would you give it to Stan and Frank later?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
if they want to, put me on hold, and I'll tell them,
Okay, I'll tell you what. We'll get your phone number, Tom, on our first-time caller line, and we'll get it to Stan and Frank. That's a story you'd probably like to get more info on,
yes,
Stan, huh?
Absolutely.
Certainly.
Like that.
Okay, let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Good evening, George and Stan and Frank. It's
Hi.
An honor to talk with you. This is Mike calling in Georgia. I wanted to get your comments on one of the most remarkable videos I've seen of a UFO. That's that one with the shuttle mission that shows the Earth, curvature of the Earth, and it looks like a white ball coming up to the Earth, and it looks like an explosion or a missile or something comes up from the Earth, and the thing gets out of the way at
It's that classic shuttle piece of tape, Stan. You've seen it. It looks like a rocket's been shot out there.
Yeah, and I don't know what that is. I've got it in my gray basket because certainly we've tested a lot of systems that the public hasn't heard about. Black budgets are multi billion dollars a year to develop far out stuff. And, part of SDI maybe to be used against aliens. Who knows? So I don't know what to make of that. We don't have enough data to really establish how far away that thing is, the right angle turn and all that sort of stuff. So these are fascinating. We need more courses being taught at the college level. We need major research programs going on. And there may be on the inside, but we sure don't hear about them on the outside.
What do you think of deathbed confessions, Stan, when it comes to these cases?
Well, they're no better than any verification that you can get. I'd like more of them because you want to be able to establish that the person is who he says he is and was where he says he was, military records, that sort of thing. There are a lot of records out there, but the government isn't giving them out. So I think they're good. What has a guy got to gain? As General DuBose told me, what can I lose now? What's he got to gain either by making up a story? There's no satisfaction out of that. How can you say gotcha when you're dead,
Good point. West of the Rockies, take it away. Hi.
Hello there.
Yeah.
Hi. I just had a question for the guys. I've seen UFOs ever since I was a kid, but nothing as close as since I've moved to Salem. And there is an Air Force base close by. And I'm not real familiar with it because I've only lived here like a year.
Oregon.
Yeah, Salem,
okay.
Oregon. And you had mentioned McMinnville, so. But I went from seeing, like, way up there, it looked like little pin lights. And I heard somebody refer to it as, like, the water bug motion. I prefer the Etch-a-Sketch, how it kind of just, they just skip around.
The erratic movements.
Right, and then we have like, you see 4 and then 8 and then 12. And then one night I went out and saw 5 right where I could see the detail of the metallic. There were 3 to the east, or no, 3 to the west. 2 on the ones on the side of it were more cylindrical.
Did you see any occupants there?
No, wasn't that close.
Do we get any more of those reports, Stan?
Occupant reports?
Yeah.
Sure.
Still keep coming in, huh?
There's a heck of a lot going on. MUFON gets well over 200 reports a month of UFOs. And abduction researchers, I get a couple email a week of people who want help with an abduction case. And I try to refer them to somebody who might be able to help them. use hypnosis or a support group or stuff like that. But there's plenty going on. You may not know it from the major media, but there's a lot going on out there, George.
First time caller line. Take it away. You're on Coast to Coast.
Yeah, hi, George. My name's Bruce. Great show.
Hi, thanks, Bruce.
I grew up in Walesville, New York. And my father told us about that plane crash that the UFO shot down. He used to live about a quarter mile away, and he said he lived on a farm, and he told us how he's seen the guys jump out with the parachutes and land.
Did he say anything about the UFO case?
No, but I read about it in the books in our high school. It wasn't in the books, but he did say that there was a UFO they were chasing.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, and that he built a house three houses down from where that crash site was. He says there were missiles and everything on that airplane.
Well, Stan, how about that?
Well, it's a famous case. And,
yeah, we lived 10 miles from Griffiths Air Force Base, too. Unfortunately, that base is closed down.
Yeah, a lot of the bases, the one in Portsmouth that Betty and Barney Hill reported to is closed. Pease Air Force Base is closed.
Frank, what happened to the UFO? Did it get away?
Obviously so, but what's interesting about that case is that when there's a radar operator in those jets as well, George, those F-94s, and the cockpit had heated up to extreme high levels, but there was no fire ever reported in the accident reports. So the heat, the source came from somewheres.
You know, it's just amazing. They're chasing something, unidentified. Something happens to their plane, they've got to jump out. I mean, how real can you get?
Yeah, there's a lot of cases destroyed like that, a car
in the
on the ground.
These that happened, George. There's dozens of them where planes were just hitting into towns and cities all over the United States.
Wildcard line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Anita. I was calling from Dayton.
Go ahead, Anita.
Hi, I was wondering if any of you had ever heard of anything like this. I was leaving work one night. I live in Dayton, Ohio. I was working about maybe a mile away from Wright Pat, and there were these three, I don't know how to describe them, they were like ball lights, they were orange, and they were in a triangle formation, kind of like lights that would be on the bottom of an airplane, but there was no airplane.
Would you think it was one big craft or three separate?
They moved in a perfect triangle formation.
Yeah, they might have been
separate.
The big one.
They were completely silent. They were right over my head.
We've heard this before, Stan Friedman, haven't we?
Oh, yes. Yeah, triangles are the end thing on the UFO scene.
They really are, and I'm beginning to think they're ours.
Well, there are some people who think that, and I don't know. Time will tell, but the government won't.
No. You know, National Press Club, November 12th, the huge news conference there, several pilots telling about their close encounters, probably picked up the best publicity of a news conference directly related to UFO cases than we've had in a long time.
Yes, definitely. And there's a movie being made, James Fox, who with Leslie Keen arranged for that whole thing, the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and don't know what the outcome of that whole business will be. I was pleased that there was some pretty decent coverage of it. Going back to the Chicago Tribune story about the O'Hare case from a year ago.
Yes.
And so maybe the world is changing. Maybe some of the media guys will finally treat it seriously. And you know, the political campaign with Dennis Kucinich's sighting coming.
Mm-hmm. That was in Shirley MacLaine's book.
Yeah, but it was also at a press conference.
Yeah.
The debate, I guess, when Russert asked about it. And at least I've seen a couple of newspaper articles that take that seriously and don't think we should be laughing, and that's progress. So I'm still an optimist, George. Despite my advanced age, I'm an optimist.
Well, you know, as I've told a few people on this program, you were the very first interview I did when I was a 21-year-old radio reporter in Detroit.
I was a little younger then, too, George.
You were. You were on the circuit. You were at a college.
Yep.
And then I remember going to the speech at night. I got an email, Stan, this is a funny story, from the guy who set you up at the college, who brought you in. And, you know, Oakland University, I think, if I remember.
Yeah, that sounds right.
It was a great, great, great bit. Look, we've got a minute to go. Stan, very quickly, your website, and then Frank. Go.
www.stantonfriedman.com. That's Friedman, F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N. Tells you how to reach me, to send me, to talk to me, whatever.
How about you, Frank?
Flatwoodsmonster.com. And I want to give a real quick note here. We had some breaking news from West Virginia. Mayor Calloway from the city of St. Albans and Larry Bailey from Brothers Bailey Promotions have given the green light, and we're going to have the 2008 Flatwoods Monster Extravaganza on the actual date, September 12th, 2008, in St. Albans.
Well, maybe if we work it out, we can broadcast coast to coast out of there.
That would be great. And what we're working on, too, George, I have 17 years of research, and the city of St. Albans is working with me, and we're going to put a museum in.
All right, Frank, you get back with our producers. We might be able to work that out if we can get in broadcast line. Stan, thank you, Frank, both of you as well. You're always a touch of class on this program. For our dear friends Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.